watch. Now we're rolling. Hi, everybody. It's Phil Parr and our little old show called Blind Like Me. You probably heard us before. We're glad that you invited us into your homes or wherever you happen to be. Our guests today are the Philroys, Gary and Lisa from where in Missouri?
Springfield.
Springfield, that's the capital.
No, the capital is Jeff City.
Jefferson City.
Huh?
Boy, am I confused. Is Springfield the capital of Illinois, I hope?
No.
Well,
I don't know what the capital of Illinois is.
Either.
That's awful.
Surely it's the capital of something. You know, every state in the world has a Springfield.
Just about.
They do have a distillery up here.
Listen, I may have to come up. What do they distill?
Whatever they can. Accent on corn.
Yeah, so they make whiskey there.
Uh-huh.
What kind? Do you know?
No, it's my buddy that makes it in little mason jars.
Oh, you've got a friend that has a distillery.
Right.
Well, that's another reason to come. Maybe I'll come visit y'all. You have a guest room?
There you go.
Well, none of us have ever met. I live in Texas and they live in Missouri. But Lisa used to get on For the People and call herself Cowgirl. Where did that come from?
Well, being from Texas, I knew I couldn't be a cowboy. So, you know, I went with Cowgirl. And plus, I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan all the way. Always had been. And being from the great state of Texas originally that I am from, I just seemed, you know, that just seemed to fit at the time.
You were originally a Dallas girl.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, where did you all meet? Did you meet in Texas or in just tell me about that, one of you.
Well, we met through taping. We were both into the taping correspondence deal at the time that all the blind were in it one time or another. And we were taping. He was married at the time, and his now ex-wife and I were taping, and he'd get on every now and then, and things just rolled along, and we met in 98 up in St. Louis.
Uh-huh. At one of the conventions, or?
No. They had moved up there after they had divorced and everything. They both moved up there, and I went up there to visit.
Uh-huh. So you were taping or corresponding with Gary with your ex-wife.
Right.
That's how it got started. You know, blind people are no different than sighted people, are they? These kind of things happen, you know, in the world of, you know, this how many people or how many times have you heard about so-and-so leaving his wife and marrying his wife's best girlfriend? Who used to hang around a lot. You know, that stuff happens in all kinds of... But Gary, you were divorced from your ex-wife when you hooked up with Lisa.
Oh, yeah. Lisa just came in and took over and said, you will. And I said, okay.
Yeah. Well, I've met women like that. In fact, I kind of like them. That way you don't have to make any decisions.
That's right.
All right. So how long have you all been together?
Forever.
We've been together... 7 years. We married in 2000.
No, Gary, it just seems like forever. The man and I have been married 16 years. I told everybody we've been happily married 10 years, and 10 out of 16 ain't bad.
There you go.
So you all got together. Let's walk back and talk about both of you are totally blind. Is that right?
That's correct.
No sight at all. Lisa, did you ever have sight?
I had a little bit, Phil, light perception in my left eye. My right eye was removed when I was 10 days old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen out of it, but I do know my colors. Because in my left eye, I was seeing well enough to know colors and that sort of thing. To make a long story short, in 75, I went and had a cornea transplant and rebuilt the inside of my eye. There was one massive scar tissue. Removed a cataract. And I was seeing pretty well with reading print with glasses and
really
and just all good kind of manner of stuff. I could read print out of the paper pretty well. And then in February of 76, I developed glaucoma. And in April of 76, the retina detached, and there it went all down the drain. But that's okay.
So
I still do what I do.
You had no sight, and then they did this operation, and they gave you some sight.
Uh huh.
What age were you then?
17.
And
they,
and,
high school.
And kaboom, you could see and read the paper.
Yeah, pretty much.
What a thing. I don't, you know, I've been totally blind all my life. I don't know whether, I guess it would be awfully hard to get your sight back and then not have your sight again. I mean, that would be pretty tough, I would think.
Well, like I said, with the light perception before I had the surgery, I could still tell light and dark, and I could tell colors and, you know, get around pretty well even before that.
Uh-huh.
And then when it's detached and I lost it, now I have no vision in either eye. So.
Okay. Once that retina detaching starts, you're lost then. They're very seldom able.
Well, you see all these black things in front of your eyes and whatever else. And sometimes they can reattach them and sometimes they can't. And in my case, they couldn't because it was just like a wadded up tissue back there.
I've talked to so many people that say, when they first their retina in one eye detached, then the other one did the same thing for some reason.
Like I said, they removed my right eye when I was 10 days old, and I'm not sure why it was so malformed, but it was. So they just took it out, and I've always had a prosthesis there. But
your left eye, you got sight in it. How long did that sight? You were 17. How long did
my
you have sight?
My light perception was for 17 years, and then when I had the surgery in October of 75, it lasted till April of 76.
So it wasn't very long.
Nope.
About 6 months, you were able to see.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know if I'd take that or not. If they offered me 6 months of sight, I guess at this age I would. But, boy, it would be hard to go back to the other way, you know, man.
All surgery, there was risk. And I, you know, at the time I thought, okay, you know, we'll see what happens. But it didn't really surprise me that it detached.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, wasn't like a shock because I halfway, just, you know, was in the back of my mind that if it did, then, you know, I'd deal with it and go back to the way I was anyway.
In other words, they knew that it possibly would, so they had kind of warned you and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you've been from the age 18 or sometime in April of the next year, you've been blind ever since.
Uh huh.
All right, Gary, what is your situation in, as far as your blindness?
Well, I was totally blind from birth, and the eyes were deformed. I had one taken out when I was 7. And the other one is very, very small. It's there, but it's shrunken.
Yeah.
And, you just do what you have to do.
Oh, yeah, you deal with it as you have to. So you've never had sight.
Right.
You don't know colors, and you're like me. You just been blind all your life.
Right.
They say red to me. They could say anything, and I don't have any concept, and I guess you don't either. When they decided to send you to school, Gary, when you were little, what did they do? And when you were 6 years old?
Well, I was 5.
Oh. Okay.
My life turned quite suddenly. I was a little backwoods country boy in the hills of Arkansas, and we were so far back in the country we had to pipe in sunshine, and the funding ran out for the piping, so it filtered in as moonshine. I had the radio was my friend. And I began to quick like a bunny pick up on the music end of it. So a lot of the stars, I felt like I knew them, and one day some Masons came up and said, if you could have anything in the world, what would you want? And I said, I want to go see the Louisiana Hayride. And so they took me down, and I got a chance to meet a bunch of the stars and what have you. And while I was there, Slim Whitman came up to me, and he said, I heard you sing a little bit. And I said, well, yeah, I suppose so. And he said, well, could you sing with a band? If my band played it, and I said, well, if they can play it, I can sing it. You know me, 5 years old, you know?
Yeah.
So my mom didn't get a chance to go to the show, and so suddenly KWKH blared out, you know, new artist, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that was my debut in entertainment. And then I went to Little Rock.
Okay, wait, hang on. This had to be in the early 50s.
It was 1950.
It would have to be around then, because the hayride really didn't last that long.
No, about 10 years.
At the most, it would be 10 years. But, man, they had excuse me, a roster of stars on the hayride. Slim Whitman, Theron Young was there at one time. Hank Williams was there at one time. Johnny and Jack were there at one time. These are all old country people. Yeah. You'd have to be our age to remember all this. But it was the hayride at one time was a big deal. I mean, it was the spawning ground for new country artists. Jim Reeves started out on the hayride. They cut Mexican Joe at KWKH in Shreveport, Louisiana. So, anyway, you were on the hayride, as in your name, Gary?
No.
No.
I was playing under another name, but I was there.
What was your stage name?
I go by Gary.
Now?
It's family problems.
Okay, all right. We won't get into that. But you were operating under another name at that time.
Yes.
And you sang, went out with the band, and sang in front of the big audience and all over KWKH on the hayride.
Yes, many times.
Man, what a thrill. I would love to have done that. I was a big hayride fan.
We later on made two singles and an album, and it paid the bills. So, of course, I'm retired now, but I loved it. I wouldn't take $1 million for the memories I've got.
You mean to tell me that you had a couple single records cut?
Yes, sir.
Cut where? There at KWKH?
No. We cut those. Bill Trish was my sound engineer. We cut them out of Baton Rouge.
In Baton Rouge. And you had
two singles and an album. The album went all the way over into Italy.
Well, anything I would have heard?
Perhaps we went as Gary and Charles, and we had a thing called Tell Me Baby that was in 66, and it went over about 15 states, and then we had, in 71, we had a double shot of Signs of the Times and Patty Ann.
And the name of the singers were Gary and Charles.
Yes.
And you had two singles, and then you have somewhere a vinyl album.
Yes.
Man, but this is, you were a grown man by the time all this took place.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I'll be darned. But you sang on the hayride, you said, a number of times.
Yeah.
20 times?
When I wasn't in school,
yeah.
I played up there enough to where if I was there, I could play.
So you met Horace Logan, of course.
Oh, yeah. Horace was my buddy. He was like a daddy.
You met Horace Logan. You probably met Hank Williams.
No, I did not. Hank was on a different circuit than I was, and of course I was in school, which restricted my playing.
Well, with Jim Reeves had he come along by then?
Yes, I knew Jim Reeves. He was always very nice to me. He was the DJ there on Kid of the Cage.
He was.
Uh huh.
He was a disc jockey there for a long time.
Yeah, he.
Horace Logan told him he couldn't sing.
Okay.
Horace Logan told him, but that's the way the story goes. True or not, I don't know. You hear a lot of.
I don't know.
You know.
I never. Yeah.
Yeah. How about Mitchell Torok? Did you meet Mitchell Torok? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I knew Mitchell, but not well. I had seen him a couple of times.
Had a gigantic hit on a little song that he wrote called Caribbean. Was a major hit record. And nothing after that. I mean, very little. Well, Hoochie Coochie Henry from Hawaii, I think.
That was the flip side, and The Haunting Waterfall followed it.
Is that right? Slim Whitman had, I've got a CD, he had some wonderful, how about My Heart is Broken in Three, I Love Three Girls Secretly. Remember that song? Slim Whitman.
Quite well.
Love Song of the Waterfall. Man, he was hot at one time.
That was the song that I sang with the band that night.
Which one?
Love Song of the Waterfall.
And you did you do the yodeling like Slim did?
I did. I had a very high voice then. It later on now, of course, it's dropped.
But you had that falsetto voice. You could do that back then.
Oh, yeah. I used to do a lot of Marty Robbins stuff and things like that.
That's pretty amazing. Well, you know, of course, what I'm going to ask you, if we had that album... sometime we could play some of the songs and talk about them and talk about your career in music and, you know.
I'll send you a CD.
If you got it on CD?
Yep.
Man, that would be great. I love to do that. And you know, you're proud of your musical career, right?
I love it, and I wouldn't take $1 million for it.
You got to do some things that most kids don't get to do, my man.
Yes, sir.
I would love to have gone to the hayride. I could sing when I was a kid. I would love to have gone and been on the hayride. All right, so you totally blind all your life. And you, what school, did they send you to blind school, or would they just...
Yeah,
you...
we went to Little Rock up until 1958, uh-huh. And then I transferred to Baton Rouge.
To Baton Rouge is that the school for the blind in Louisiana?
Yeah.
Okay, so you went through blind schools all your life.
Yes, sir.
Oh, all right. How was Arkansas school? Was it a good place to be or not fun?
Well,
or?
The food was awful, but they gave you a super good education.
Yeah. But the food was awful. I've never heard anybody. Well, I think one kid we talked to that said blind school food was good. I've never heard anybody say blind school food was. Yeah, it was pretty bad. We used to. Boy, the greatest thrill, when I got old enough to play music, we'd go out, and the first thing I'd do is, you know, before we go to the dance, stop by the Rodeo Cafe and let me eat a couple hamburgers before I starve to death.
I'm telling you.
If I'm going to play this job, you're going to have to feed me.
Yes, sir, because that was like slapping the hogs at school.
The blind school food was pretty bad. All right, so you graduated your 12 years, and then I guess you went on and played music for a while. You thought you could make it as a musician.
That's correct.
That is correct. Well, you can, but it's a hard row to hoe, folks.
Well, it depends a lot on who you know and what you know.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of the guys, Jerry Kennedy, for example, who was president for many, many years of Mercury.
Yeah.
Jerry and I were good friends.
Really?
Yeah. And, in fact, if I still see him up there, one time I went to, I had some business up there because I had my own record company.
In Nashville?
And so I came in the door and I said, Trish, I need to see Jerry a minute. And she said, well, he's not here. I said, oh, well, look. Stick your head in the back and tell him I said I need, and I told her, you know, what I needed. So she gets up, never says a word, goes in the back, and she comes back out and she says, do you know him? And I said, nope.
But you did. You were good friends with his.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard the Statler Brothers album where they do the Roadhog?
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And they talk about Jerry Kennedy.
Super nice man.
Jerry Kennedy on the Mercury record label here, come down here. You know, the main character, what's his name?
Harold.
It's Harold, but I can't remember the guy that he's playing. Roadhog. The Roadhog, that's what he calls himself. Talks about Mr. Jerry Kennedy.
Lester Moran and the Cadillac Cowboys.
That's it, boy. That's the funniest album I've ever heard in my life. You got to sit down and listen to it, though. But yeah. It is hilarious. So you played music for a living how long until you realized there wasn't any money in it?
I played actually for about 4 years, and this woman I know said that I should learn a trade and quit being a bum. And so I did it. I went to piano tuning school and continued to play music. And we organized a gospel group back in 71. We played with the Goodmans and the Downings and the Florida Boys and
everybody.
You know, a few of those lesser known characters.
Yeah.
And so again the star continued to shine for me and I loved it. But the group broke up eventually, and so I had my piano tuning business by then, and for about 30 years, that kind of carried me as far as trade, you know, income and stuff like that.
You tune pianos. Yeah. Was this lady that said you need to quit being a bum and find a trade, was that a wife of yours that said that? Was that?
You're very close.
She could have been. But it wasn't this wife.
No.
It wasn't Lisa.
Lisa, kill me.
I'm glad to find it out. Lisa, what did they think of you in school? Where did they send you when you got to be?
Well, I went to public school. I was fortunate and went to public school in Dallas and graduated from public school. And I did go to TSB during 3 summer sessions to get some high school credits.
Uh-huh.
And, which worked out real well because when I had my surgery was my senior year, so I didn't go to school half that year. And in order to graduate, I had to have those credits, so it worked out real well. But I did. I was fortunate enough to be able to go to public school. I had a good time, especially in high school. I joined the drill team and
really?
Joined the pep squad and just roused it around. doing different things like that in school. I was very well accepted, and it just rolled along. I loved it.
Yeah, you were very fortunate there. I've talked to kids that that go into public school that weren't. It felt very isolated, but you didn't. You felt accepted.
No,
and
I felt accepted, and during high school, I'd help out with the athletic department. They sold donuts every morning, and I'd get there and help them out and go get your change at the office and all kinds of good stuff. Just like I said, I just had a real good time, and like I said, especially in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, elementary school was basic, you know, kids. We'll be kids and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I did all right there, but high school was my favorite time.
How did you get around the campus? With a cane or just...
Yep. The mobility instructor and I would go for orientation about a week or so before school started, and I'd learn my way around the building and where my classes were and everything, and it just worked real well.
Uh-huh. Of course, you were young then. You could hear real well, and you did the cane, you know, while you may have needed it a little bit, you could actually, when you're young and you got good ears, you can get around without that cane.
Yeah, just about, especially in a building like that, pretty well.
You can hear those walls jumping out in front of you.
Oh, yeah. After high school, went to vocational. I went to the Lighthouse in Houston for training.
Is that right?
And switchboard and worked for the phone company in Dallas for about 4 years.
Was Jerry Rugenek still there when you went to the Lighthouse? Was she still there?
Well, in Houston, I didn't know her.
You didn't know her. She was the director, I think, of the Lighthouse. So they taught you switchboard operation, and you went to work for the phone company in where?
In Dallas?
I went
back to Dallas and got my old job back at the phone company, which I had worked at during the summer of 75, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so I got my old job back.
At the phone company and worked there 4 years.
Yep, from 79 to 83.
Why did you quit the phone company? That seems like a job that would be a perfect job for a blind person.
Well, they were fixing to split up and move the operators out to the boondocks, for one thing.
Uh-huh.
And number two, I decided that I thought I should get married at the time. And I moved to Evansville, Indiana in December of 83 and got married in 84, and that lasted a couple years. And then
you moved up there for a guy, moved up to Indiana for your boyfriend.
For a guy, yes.
You never want to do that.
After we split up, I stayed up there and got involved in ham radio and got involved in karate and got involved in whatever else I could get into to cause trouble or whatever else. Well,
In karate, you took karate instructions?
Uh-huh.
Gary?
That's why when she says no, it's no.
My wife has a black belt.
Yeah, I got my black belt in 98.
My wife has a black belt. You know what I did? I bought a gun.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I didn't. But yeah, my wife took her niece and my granddaughter, and they all three went back in the 90s and got their black belts.
All right.
It was pretty neat.
I loved it.
I've often wondered if a blind person could do that. I guess they can. You did it.
Yep, I did it.
Yeah.
I did competition. Now, I did not do sparring or, you know, what they call fighting or whatever.
Sparring, yes.
I didn't do that, but I did the form, which is kata, and I competed in forms with weapons.
And you broke a lot of boards if you got your black belt.
Well, I tried to break boards. I hurt my hand more than I broke the board, but that's okay.
Well, you got to break boards or you won't get that yellow belt or whatever it is. I remember I spent a whole weekend sawing. We bought several pieces of shelving material, and I saw it up into links, and those girls would break those boards.
Break those boards, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you hit it just right, man, they go.
You can. I learned to do it. I got to where I could do three laying there, you know. But my granddaughter always wanted me to hold the ones for her to break.
Uh-huh.
And you got to hold them tight, you know.
And you do. Big time.
That's something. So you did all this in Illinois. Why? Just thought you would?
I did all this in Indiana from 94 to 98. And I'd always liked martial arts. When I was in high school, I'd taken judo from a friend of mine that taught it.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't go in competition. Well, yes, I did, too. I went to a little bit of competition in judo during high school. But when I took karate, that was my main goal, was also to do competition and whatever I could.
Because your marriage had already split up. Were you working while you were up there?
Nope. I was on SSDI.
And taking karate lessons. What
karate.
A deal. What a deal. I love it. So you ended up back in Dallas or what? Ended up back where?
Well, I moved to St. Louis. Yeah. And then Gary and I got together.
I gather no children came out of this marriage.
No. No children out of either one.
I wanted a dozen daughters, but I didn't get them.
You didn't get them. Even with your first wife, you didn't get any?
No, I must have done something wrong.
So it's just y'all against the world, isn't it?
Yep, it's us against the world. And
So you ended up in Missouri. That was the next step, was ended up in Missouri?
The next step, I went to Missouri and met Gary, and then we moved down to Rolla, which is a little town between here and St. Louis. It's about the halfway mark between here and St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And his cousin lived down there, so we rented a house for a couple years until we moved down here and bought this one.
Yeah. But Gary, were you still tuning when you met her?
No. I worked for Liberty Mutual Insurance for a while, and I developed a permanent tennis elbow from typing.
Really?
So I was on workman's comp.
You weren't selling insurance. You were in the office.
Right.
Did we have talking computers by then or not?
No, sir, we did not.
So you were typing, but you didn't know what you were typing.
That's the idea. I have. It's a rare gift. You can talk to me, and if I'm sitting at a keyboard, I can type it instantly, but I won't know what I'm typing.
Yeah, really?
That's right.
In other words, you can take dictation on the fly. I could be dictating and you could be typing, but you wouldn't even worry about what you were typing. You just do
that's
it automatically.
Right. That's right.
Man, that's a pretty neat skill. I do commercials by I have someone read, if I'm doing a 30-second spot, I'll have someone read it on tape, and I put a little earphone in my ear, and I repeat what they said in my announcer voice, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what they said. I know what I said, but I don't know what they said. So I guess it's the same kind of thing in reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be
I was a jock for a while. In fact, the interesting story, I was working at a radio station as a commercial copywriter, and one of my buddies was in danger of losing an account, and he brought me the information, and I said, okay, let me see what I can do. So I went home that night, and I told Charles, we had an old wall and sack reel-to-reel, and I said, get your guitar. I got an idea.
Yeah.
So we took the tune to Catch a Falling Star.
Uh-huh.
And we wrote a Mid-City Ford used car jingle.
Uh-huh.
And so I brought it to the station the next morning. I gave it to him. I said, Bob, that ought to help you out. And so we were having a sales meeting, and my boss happened to hear it from the studio next door, and he said, who is that? And Bernie said, that's a commercial that Gary brought in for Bob. And Mr. McGregor said, that's it. You don't do air work anymore. You sing. And so it actually lost my job, although I helped.
But you were working on the air some.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you got the radio bug also.
Oh, yes.
From listening to KTHS in Little Rock.
That was part of it, yeah.
You know, they ran the Hayride at one time.
Uh-huh.
At one time it was on both stations. It was on KWKH and KTHS in Little Rock.
Yes.
The same guy owned both stations. That didn't last long. And on the Little Rock station, it sounded terrible because they were doing it on a phone line. So it sounded terrible. So you did some radio. This is after piano tuning or before or what?
I didn't do actually much board work. It was just primarily announcing and stuff like that because we didn't have those. At that time, you had to have 3 meter readings every half hour.
Yes, sir.
And we didn't have a thing that would talk and let me do it.
Yes, sir. And you could pass the first two elements, but you couldn't pass element 9, so you couldn't get a third phone.
That's it.
Or did they require a first at your station?
Well, it was a first at our station.
They had to have a first, so it was a directional radio station.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they had to have a first, so they had to have a first phone operator there at all times.
Yep.
Those were the dark days, and we had nothing that talked. We had nothing that talked, and those first phone guys, most of them came from Elkins, and they didn't know near as much as I did, but they were the first phone operator, and they had to be there.
Oh, the man that I took broadcasting from, Joe Costello in New Orleans, has built several stations around the world,
uh-huh.
And he is a super, super. the things that I know in radio now, they still haven't caught up to.
Yeah. Joe Costello. Seems like I know that name from somewhere.
Maybe he's a dandy.
Maybe I've run across him somewhere. Now, he's sighted, right?
Yeah.
But he's an engineer. And
first class.
And Bill's radio, consulting engineer, is engineer Bill's radio stations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to meet him sometime. Bring him down. We'll split up all night and drink a Sour Mash whiskey and talk about radio.
I'd take a limousine if I brought Tiny.
He's a good-sized boy, is he?
He's about 5'6", and weigh about 380.
Good Lord. Yeah, those engineers, there's always something different about them. They're always different kind of guys, you know. They aren't normal guys, don't become broadcast engineers. I don't know why, but that's almost to a fault true. They usually is some physical something a little different about a broadcast engineer. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was slightly acquainted with Bill Bragg, who owns Yesterday USA. And Bill was another strange one.
Believe it or not, I know Bill, but not well, but quite well.
Yeah.
I know Brother Bill. Brother Bill is still, I think he's on the internet, and he's still using some drops that I did for him 20 years ago.
He's a genius in his own way.
He is. Bill is a very sharp fella, but Bill is too much of a mooch. I mean, he thinks somebody owes him something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
I did some stuff for him and did a couple little shows for him. But I had to get away from him. He just drove me crazy because he always thought somebody. He was like my second wife. Everything was a crisis. There was always something wrong, some major problem we got to solve. And if we don't, the world will come to an end if we don't fix this. Well, I got tired of it, and so I haven't talked to him in many, many years. But I had a good friend named John Conley who'd go out there every Sunday night and run the board for him when he did back when he was doing his big Sunday night show. Oh, so you were one of the callers in or on that show, I guess.
Yeah, I talked to Bill from time to time, and, you know.
Yeah. I guess he's still on. I haven't checked lately, but I suppose he's on his fourth or fifth wife and still doing Yesterday USA.
He's still on the net. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, of course, he was on these old C-band satellites, and nobody uses them anymore. And
right.
Dish Network they're not Dish Network and DirecTV. They're not going to put him on. Even though what he runs is good stuff. I mean, Ronnie Millsap, I think, is still doing an hour show for him once a week, I think, playing old-time radio.
Yeah, I am. Tuned Ronnie's piano one night and what have you. I met his drummer, but I never met Ron.
Is that right? Tuned his piano at some club where he was going to play that he brought?
No. We were at the Old South Jamboree. Me and Charles and the boss's daughter founded that show, and it's still going.
Well, tell me about what is that? I don't know about it.
Okay, the Old South Jamboree is like the Louisiana Hayride was.
Uh-huh.
The only difference is they don't have near the talent.
The Old South Jamboree, where is it? Where is it?
Okay, if you go in Baton Rouge and you go out east, you go past Denham Springs, and there's a little community out there called Walker.
Uh-huh.
And it's out slamming the boondocks, but they pack them in about 2,500 every Saturday night.
And it's a stage show as opposed to a nightclub show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that'd be kind of fun to go do. I find myself in New Orleans every couple of years. We've got some friends that live in Slidell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that live in Slidell because the train comes through Slidell. The Amtrak train comes through Slidell on the way to New Orleans. Like the City of New Orleans train that comes from Chicago goes through Slidell.
Comes through the middle of the house. Go ahead.
The railroad runs through the middle of the house. I wouldn't have thought of that. I wouldn't have thought of that for $10. I do remember the song, but I wouldn't have. No, it's not Slidell. It's Mandeville where they live.
Oh.
Mandeville.
Right, it's across the river.
Yeah, it's on this side, on the north side of the river.
Yeah.
So they came and stayed with us when the big hurricane, when Katrina came through. Anyway, so this little jamboree goes on every Saturday night. Do you ever go and perform there? Or I guess not
I
anymore.
Haven't been there in, I almost went back for our 40th, but I changed my mind. I said, No, all my buddies are gone, and the ones that are there, they'd have to wheel them out of the geriatric ward to play.
Yeah.
So I just decided to shove it.
Well, how old are you?
61, be 62 in about a couple of weeks.
Is that right? You got an October birthday? What day in October?
7th.
The 7th. Well, mine's the 12th. We're both Libras.
Yeah.
We'd get along real good. What, but Lisa, I don't mean to be ignoring you.
That's okay.
But I guess we are, aren't we?
No, you ain't.
I guess you'll tell us to shut up when you want us to, won't you?
That's right.
And she'll mean it, too.
And I got she'll mean it, too. What instruments do you play, Gary?
I was primarily a rhythm guitar, but I could play a little bit of everything.
Uh-huh.
Always, a little.
Yeah.
If I had to, I know my music theory, so I could have picked out the piano, drums, cornet, trumpet, you know, just whatever the situation called for.
I always said I know enough, I can play enough of any instrument to do a jingle if I have to. You know, to lay a music bed on a jingle. But I'm a bass and rhythm guitar player myself. That's what I do. I play.
Yeah, well, I played bass for quite a while.
Is that right? Well, we're about the same. What, have you got a Martin?
I wish.
You wish, huh?
We used a D-28 for all of our sessions.
Yeah, they're the Cadillac.
But now they want something like $4,500 for one of those boxes. I can't afford it.
Yeah, they do, unless you find one on eBay occasionally. We bought a couple of guitars from eBay, as a matter of fact, but you never know what you're going to get. You know, you don't know what sort of shape it's going to be in. So you don't play anymore. In fact, both of you are retired.
Yeah. My arthritis, I have multiple myeloma, which is bone cancer.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, and with the arthritis both, I can play about one song, and I'm just screaming.
It hurts that bad.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's terrible to have that taken away from you. And there's no drug you can take that eases the pain? Or
no, we keep it in remission, but that's all we got.
You do have it in remission, so it's not going to get you. It's you're going to be able to live with it.
Well, for a while.
Yeah. And, Lisa, I gather that you're a whole lot younger than Gary. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 49.
49. I didn't have any idea. So you just went, Lisa, you just went up to Indiana, then came back to Missouri, and that's where you've lived.
That's where I stayed.
Are your parents still alive? Are they in Dallas?
No, my dad's just east of Dallas or somewhere right around Fort Worth where he's at, and he's married. And Mom is in Nebraska, and she's married, and I've got two sisters, one in Virginia and one in Texas.
Okay, both of you totally blind. How much sighted help do you need to run your lives? I guess you have somebody come by and read the mail or come by and...
We do. We've got a friend that comes over once a week and does our house cleaning, basic cleaning, and because with the health care service, since Gary's cancer and stuff, we can get... help, you know, and we have a nurse come, or he's got a nurse that comes by once a month and checks his blood pressure and all that good sort of stuff.
Really?
And then Oxford also has what they call aid that comes out and helps us with the house cleaning, and she'll read mail if I need it, or we've also got a scanner, if we want to scan it in, we can.
Yeah.
And then as far as we've got plenty of real good friends that are drivers for us that Gary got through the Cancer Society that have taken him to treatment, and then we've become real good friends, and we've been running around with them, and they drive for us if we need it. And
so life is good.
Life is good. We've been very, very blessed up here.
Well, you know, one thing, I was looking forward to this interview because you always, every time I've talked to you on For the People or yesterday, you just sound... just happy. I mean, you don't sound down at all about anything.
Nope. You got to do what you got to do, and there's ways of doing it. Like you said, it may be an inconvenience, but there's ways of doing stuff if you need it done or want to do it bad enough.
Yeah, being blind is a hell of an inconvenience, but it's not insurmountable. It can be done.
Yep.
What? And so you got friends that drive you around. I'll be glad when I get old enough I can have a nurse come by once a week.
There you go.
That'd be kind of nice. I might apply for that. That'd be kind of nice to have a nurse come by and kind of check on me, take my blood pressure.
If she's about 25 and
better watch out. Now his wife might have something to say about that.
At my age, I wouldn't care if she was 55.
I know the fear.
I'm 60, fixing to be 67 in October. Mm-hmm. So I got a couple years on you. But it's great to remember the old Hayride. I've often wondered if there was somewhere where any tapes of that, because it was a great show. Other than
there is. Yes, sir. I have them.
You have tapes of the Hayride?
Uh huh.
Well, why don't you just run one or two of those off on cassette or something and send them to me?
Why don't you just come up on my computer server and you can download to your heart's content?
Oh,
you know how to do FTP, Phil?
You do what now?
FTP.
I do. I absolutely do. You have a website that's got some of these, some of your music there?
I can put it up there.
All right. Why don't you tell us about that? Do you have some of your vocal stuff, your album, or your?
Yeah, it's up there.
Is it now?
Okay, it's an FTP server, and it has about 40,000 e-books. That's electronic books, which they don't have voices on them, but if you have a Bookport or a Victor Stream or anything like that, you can read them. And then I have about 50,000 old radio shows and about 20,000 albums.
That you have put up there yourself?
But they're not all up there. They won't fit.
They all won't fit.
No. So, it's a monster.
Well, these books, where did you get these books? From Bookshare?
No. I'm not affiliated with Bookshare at all. This is just a library that I built.
These are books you have scanned in yourself?
I scanned some, and I downloaded some, and I bummed some, and they just came.
Now, and most of them are just text files, little text files.
Uh-huh.
But Bookport will read them, and of course, a stream will read them.
Yes.
Have you ordered a stream yet?
No, sir.
So you're using Bookport?
I don't need a stream.
You don't need a stream. Well, you have a Bookport.
Yeah.
So you don't need a stream, I guess, unless you wanted to download stuff.
I probably got more books than NLS got.
Well, NLS has now on their site about 8,000.
Yeah, well, I'm showing somewhere over 40. I don't have any idea how many over 40,000.
And all those books are up there?
Yes, sir.
Now, they all fit, because they're just a little bitty file, aren't they?
Yeah, they fit. There's a lot of music. If you request something, that's Lisa's department. If you, that is in the music. She knows, she's in charge of the music.
Okay.
I handle the books and the shows.
Okay, there is a place to request things, and if you...
No, you're doing it now.
What do you mean I'm doing it now?
You're requesting things now.
If you say something about, like, you'd like some Merle Haggard or you'd like such and such, if we've got it, Gary can either throw it up on the server or I can burn CDs and send them to you or whatever.
Okay, so you do that by phone?
Well, you can do it, you know, like I said, if you wanted to, just the general, say you say, okay, have you got so-and-so? I'd like to have so-and-so. Okay, you'll get so-and-so, you know. Or if you want to email me with a list of stuff that you might want, or, you know, there's different ways of doing
then,
it.
Then you would put it on CD and send it to him?
I'd put it on CD and send it to you, or he could throw it up on the server if you wanted to download it.
And you could download. Do you charge for this?
No.
No, you don't?
No.
So you buy CDs for 20 cents a piece like I do?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's more like 15, but you're right.
It's close to. I don't know where you get them for 15, but I did figure out that I was thinking about doing a magazine, and I figured out that you can buy 5,000 for $750. I found a website you could do that, and that makes them about 15 cents a piece.
Shop for Tech is the place.
Shop for Tech.
That's right. Number 4 Tech.
Shop, the number 4 Tech. That's the place you buy CDs.
That's the place we get ours.
Oh, that's great information, because blind people love stuff like that. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I thought of a song, so you have quite a country music collection?
I've got a CD cabinet, Phil, that's got over 2,500 CDs in it, and then I've got another stacks of CDs all over this house that are music.
So you figure you've got 3,000 plus CDs?
If not more, yeah.
If not more. Well, suppose I wanted Red Foley's Cincinnati's Dancing Pig. Do you have it?
We've got the Red Foley box. Oh, Chef. Now, if it's on it, we've got it.
I
also got some single CDs by Red Foley, but yeah, we've got Red Foley.
You bought the Red Foley box set?
Yep. Yep.
Well, I haven't done that yet. I didn't realize there was one. I'm sure I'm sure it's on there, and I have it. My wife found it on eBay on a vinyl album, and I bought the album. That was one of the songs. I was just trying to think. Let me think now.
We've got Eddie Arnold. We've got.
How about Hank Locklin?
Hank Locklin. I've got both of his boxes.
There was some Hank Locklin song I was thinking of the other day that I don't have. I did country music on the local radio station here for 12 years from my house. I had a leased phone line, equalized it myself, and did a couple hours a day. We sold sponsors ourselves. In other words, we bought the time. And then we decided we got brave, and we decided we would do a swap shop thing. We called it Tradio, and Tom came over and did Tradio every morning. Then they'd run the new news, and then from 1 to 3, I'd do old country. Well, Tradio got so popular that they took the whole thing away from us. We were making too much money, you know. I guess we were. I think we were each taking home about $700 a month apiece. And they decided we were making too much money. So back in '97, they took it away from us, and it didn't hurt near as bad as I thought it was going to.
Right.
Those things happen. So
I've
you've
got all kinds of box sets, you know. I always like to buy the artists. If I like them well enough, I'll buy their box.
I guess you have the Jim Reeves box set.
Yep.
The big collection.
The big
isn't
one,
it?
Welcome to my world.
It's wonderful. That's got, well, the one I have has the old Abbott stuff on it. The old Mexican Joe and El Rancho Del Rio. And
well, we've got his Radio Day boxes and the big Welcome to My World box.
The Radio Days. I wasn't familiar with that.
There's
two of them.
Two boxes of Radio Days of Jim Reeves.
And that's when he was on KGRI? Or when he was at Shreveport? Or where was he?
Jim Reeves got around.
I think that's a mixture of wherever he's been on several places. I haven't really listened to it thoroughly, but...
Well, he started out at the Henderson, the radio station Henderson, KGRI, which is not there anymore, which is off the air.
Right.
In fact, back a number of years ago, we bought that. They had a little FM, and we bought that AM/FM, and I got to look around at those studios where, you know, the ghost of Jim Reeves was there. And then he worked at KWKH, but I think that's the only two places he worked radio, weren't they?
Yes.
I believe so. So this is some Henderson and some KWKH.
Uh-huh.
And that's available, I guess, from wherever, Amazon, or where do you buy music?
We buy ours from Collector's Choice, usually, or Ernest Tubb Record Shop. I bought some stuff from them and from Collector's Choice Music.
Collector's Choice is pretty good. They have most anything you would want.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you've got DC++.
Now what?
If you've got DC++, they've got it free.
What is DC++?
It's a little file-sharing club that operates, and if you happen to be a member of it and belong to some of the various hubs, they have lists of stuff that's available, and you can go up and download it free.
You can download it free.
Yep, and then you have to share some of your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You can download it free because we got a lot of our stuff from D.C. as well. So.
This is like Napster used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. I didn't think there were any of those left.
There's a bunch of them. You just got to know where to look.
But they'll take, anybody can join as long as you open your music to them.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So you have a lot of music on computer.
Yes.
On your computer.
A lot of MP3s.
I don't think we ever gave the location of your website. Do you mind doing that?
Yes, but let me explain. First of all, you'd have to contact me via email with a username and password and ask for an account on my server.
Okay.
My email address is rafi@mchsi.com.
All right, do it one more time for us, slow.
rafi@mchsi.com.
Okay, so this is not an open-to-the-public website. It is a private website.
Right, right.
And but you, what they create their own password, or you give them a password?
Yeah. If they want to, if they want an account up there, they would send me a username and password, and then I'll send them a link that they can log right into the server
and download any of those books they want. Now, how are your books organized, or are they organized?
They are. I have the author with the first name first. Nothing has bothered me more over the years.
The NLS site is like that. It has last name first, you know. Patterson James, you know.
Yeah, well.
So yours is the other way around.
Yes, sir.
If you're looking for James Patterson, you hit the letter J.
That's right.
They're organized by authors.
Uh-huh.
That's all you need, really. You know.
Yeah.
What else?
Right.
What else do you need?
Well, that would open up the when you apply for membership. Then I tell you, you know, how to do what and this, that, and the other.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, that's it.
And if you want to hear a song, you'll put it up there, and this person, whomever they may be, or me, I could go download that song.
You can go download it. I won't put it up there for you to just hear it. I got too much work to do. If
now,
you want the song, if you want the song, I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
The album, you can download it, then keep it and do whatever you want to with it.
Yeah. But you have too much work to do, but you, but somebody'd have to put it up there.
Oh, I'll put it up there.
Yeah.
But I'm saying I'll leave it for like maybe a week, and then it's gone.
And then it's gone. Doesn't stay. But the but these 40,000 books are there all the time.
Yeah.
He's more into books than he is music, Phil. And as many books as he's getting and stuff, that server gets full, so the rest of it is that request, and then you go get it, and then he'll take it down.
You know, it's
and,
just
and
amazing.
Music and stuff.
It's amazing because, you know, this is something you're doing that obviously you're passionate about. Both of you, you do this all the time. This is what you do. You're both retired, so you have time to do it. But I never would have known about it if I hadn't called you and done an interview with you, would I?
No, you probably wouldn't.
No. So, you know, who people say, you know, that's wonderful that you do that show. It's nice. You know, we've done 160, 70 of them. It's wonderful that you do that show. But believe me, I've learned, I've gained more than anybody from doing these. All right. Okay, so Lisa, you do the music and Gary does the books.
Right.
Does it, puts up the books. And
yeah, he does all the server work. If somebody wants certain music, I'll go pull it from the cabinet or whatever, take it to him. He'll put it on the server and then...
How just real quick, we're kind of almost out of time. How do you have your CDs organized? Just alphabetically?
I've got all the artists together, and not necessarily alphabetically, but I do try to keep all the artists together.
All the Jim Rees, all the Hank Locke, and all the Eddie Arnold.
Right, exactly.
Well, if I want a song, I'll certainly know who to call, won't I?
That's right.
I need to email you and go look at your website. Gary, if you don't mind, do it one more time, and let me. I'm going to try to copy it here.
Okay. I had a guide dog named Rafi.
Uh-huh.
And he's gone now, but
okay.
He was super.
All right.
So I took the email after him, and it goes on. RAFFI.
All right.
At MCHSI.com.
All right. Very good. We've been visiting with Lisa and Gary Philroy from Springfield, Missouri. Nice to meet you folks, and I'll be emailing you and checking in on your website. Lisa, thank you. Gary, appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Have a wonderful day.
All right, guys, I'll talk to you, and I'll let you know when we get ready to run this, okay?
Okay,
right on.
Good.
Hey, thanks much.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Since we did that interview with those folks, I can't remember, back in early October, we received a CD from Gary of some of his music. I have not had a chance to listen to it, but I would say, if I had to guess, it is probably probably some good country music. So we're going to plan in the next couple of weeks maybe to do a show with him, with the Gary and Lisa again, but using some of Gary's music on the show, like we do have done with some other folks with the music, and see what sort of musician he is, and maybe some songs that he's written, and certainly some songs that he's played on. So look forward to that. That'll be good. Seem like nice folks are having a good time living in Missouri. Boy, it gets hot in Missouri, too. I think it gets hot in Texas, but it gets... Yeah, it's pretty warm in Missouri. Anyway, we do one of these every week, or almost every week, do about 40 shows a year of this Blind Like Me stuff. And, of course, we would need a guest for every show, and we also do... you probably already know the Blind Handyman. We need guests for that, folks who do handyman things, who work on whatever, cars or plumbing or carpentry or gardening or whatever we consider handyman sorts of things. Fix appliances around the house or whatever. We'd love to have you as a guest on the Blind Handyman Show. You can reach me. I don't book the guests for the Handyman Show. Don Shaw does that, but I'll get you to him, his address, and I don't have it memorized. N5GBI at yahoo.net. Anyway, mine is Phil Parr, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, at consolidated.net, C-O-N-S-O-L-I-D-A-T-E-D. Phil Parr, all one word, at consolidated.net will do it. Or if you want to try the other one that works quite well also, a little slower, but Phil at philparr.net will also work. My phone number here at my home where we do put together these shows, 936-634-9500, if you want to call. But the best thing to do is email me so that I'll have your information and we'll get a hold of you. And love to have you as a guest. You don't have to be a special anything. You just we just look for blind people who are dealing with blindness on a day-to-day basis. Isn't that enough? Anyway, give us a call, 936-634-9500. Phil Parr at consolidated.net. Thanks for listening. We'll do it again next week. Bye-bye.